is The Business of Being Human. I'm Christine Hildebrand.
And I'm Wendy Horn Brower of Intune Collective. We help leaders like you reinvent how you lead and operate, connecting you and your companies to greater possibility and performance.
From joy to awareness to consciousness and capacity building, we know that business as usual isn't business at all.
So, welcome to another episode of The Business of Being Human. I'm Wendy Horn Brower, and I'm here today with a very special guest, a friend, colleague, a brilliant facilitator and leader and systems thinker who I would like to introduce you to. We're about to have a great conversation today about a topic that is very abstract and amorphous, but super timely. We're talking about DEIB, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. And in that conversation, we want to like ground it and simplify how DEIB can be approached within organizations, because often it's complicated and often it has a lot of layers to it. But really what it's about are the human beings. So today's conversation is focusing on the personal power of the individual to choose to step in and out of the spaces, and then the quality of the relationships and what can happen in the workplace that foster inclusion and belonging for individuals. And we're going to introduce a concept called the closed loop system of belonging, and then we'll go from there. So again, I'm Wendy Horn Brower from Intune Collective. I'm here with Victoria Rogers, who has a combined 20 years of leadership in business development, culture transformation, through DEI, learning development, I'm going to read here, leadership coaching, master facilitation, and strategy consulting, complemented by degrees in strategic management information systems and an MBA in global business strategy. She also holds certifications in energy leadership coaching. Love to hear more about that for sure. And is a mindfulness meditation teacher certified for studios and corporate environments. Currently, Victoria Rogers is the Idea Strategy Director at Tier 1 Performance, responsible for the establishment of IDEA, inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility. We'll talk about that too. Business practice and the incorporation of the education, mindset, and behaviors that drive systemic change. So welcome, Victoria. I'm really happy and grateful for our time together.
Hey, Wendy.
Yes, hands up and big cheer.
So overdue. I'm so excited to chat with you. And you were reading my bio and I was like, yeah, we've created a lot of space over the years.
Yeah. A lot of learning and growing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then sharing.
Yeah, right? A lot of learning, growing, yeah. And experimenting. Right? Like that's the fun part, you know, mm-hmm. in this work, in this human work, it's the experimentation and the pivots mm-hmm. and learning from every single interaction.
Just because I'm curious about people's stories, first and foremost, mm-hmm. where did your sense of experimentation come from mm-hmm. and your openness to learning and growing?
So the sense of experimentation, I don't even think that I realized that it was exactly what I was doing when I started to do it. Mm-hmm. As a facilitator, early career facilitation, I was also responsible mm-hmm. for the development of programming. And what I would learn is that I would come up with these, I'd have a curriculum in front of me, and it was, you know, facilitate to these specific types of points and understanding what the overall objectives were, and then being in front of participants and being able to test out, is this going to land with them? Like in the flow mm-hmm. of facilitation, what type of stories in myself do I need to bring into the room? And then it was, okay, so from what I heard in the room, how might that inform some of the future thinking of how we approach, you know, learning and development for this audience? How might I bring in some, you know, some different types of ways of introducing concepts into the classroom and allowing for those experiments to truly drive user experience for how programs evolve and the ways in which we supported or the way in which I supported, you know, organizations just based off of the observations of people. And then years ago, you know, as a strategy consultant, what I started to really learn, because I love design thinking and this concept of being comfortable with failure and being willing to have what it is that you want to be able to design to and an experience that you're designing to. But then it's, how might I create a prototype of what that is, right? And creating a prototype of a concept or of an asset, et cetera, and then going out and testing it with, you know, the people, the target audiences and the subject matter experts. So be able to understand, like, is it feasible? Is it desirable? Is it usable? And so taking that approach in every single thing, Wendy, has been helpful for me, especially in this DEIB space and with leadership development, any type of experience, quite frankly, that's being designed for an organization. It's the constant sensing from the people. But in order to experiment, you have to have the mindset of it's okay to not have it all figured out right now, right? Iterate along the way, be agile, and that all of the knowledge doesn't have to come from me, it doesn't have to come from our team. That's why I like that concept of experimentation, because it's, it also helps combat the perfectionism, right? So
that's right.
It's right. It's a fun space to be in.
So I was in a group last night of women of color, and we were talking about a similar type of topic. And, you know, it's common. People say, well, it's really hard as a woman of color, right? And the woman who's specifically talking was a Black woman, to say, to take risks and to not feel like I have to work twice as hard as other people to show that what I'm doing makes sense and that I know what I'm doing and that I can perform. So how do you, how do we balance that framing of we need to perform to someone else's expectations, or there's some biases in place, to real risk-taking and letting go of perfectionism and saying, because that's what the system requires and that's what's needed, you know, for the end users?
That's a juicy question, Wendy. I think from my personal experience, I did get to a point in my career where I said, you know what? I have this seat at the table for a reason. They have invited me at this table for my expertise. And even though I may not use all of the big words that other strategists use, or even though I may not, have a PhD, you know, like all those credentials that kind of get in our way of, am I supposed to be here? It was, I'm just going to embrace the assignment and show up so fully and so unapologetically, just me. Because if that's the feedback that I'm hearing is, wow, like your style, Victoria, is X, or wow, every time I engage with you, I feel, you know, X, or wow, like I just really appreciate your thought process. Those statements are made for a reason. And so understanding that it's about leaning into my inner power. It's about recognizing that, yes, I have mostly in my career and in education been one of the only Black women, or, you know, early career, one of the only women, because I came out of telecommunications. If I know that in my career, I have been the only at the table, I also know some of the things to look for that are potential red flags, or that are things that are going to be barriers for me, right? But because I also know that, I leverage that to how it is that I do show up. It's not about assimilating to that environment. It is about what are the necessary adjustments that I need to make to make sure that this audience hears me, to make sure that they feel me, to make sure that I leave the ripple, right? And it ends up being less about me showing up as a, like, oh, it's kind of challenging because I'm a Black woman. And, you know, I know that sometimes when I have to be strong and stern, it may be perceived as, oh, she's defensive, or I know that might be said already, right? And that has nothing to do with me. That has to do with them, right? And so it really is, Wendy, about stepping into my own power. It's about knowing and recognizing I'm at the table for a reason. And it's also about recognizing that, like, I can't solve for all of the bias and the microaggressions and all of those things before they even happen. Because if I had to continue to think about it, I would get frozen just where I am. But there is a greater opportunity that I do always take, especially working in predominantly white environments, is an opportunity to make sure that we have conversation, to make sure that it's a little bit of education of how certain things, when you say certain things, how it might be perceived, or trying to help with healing a system from the inside so that, you know, perhaps it's not the first time that my peers see someone with braids in the workplace, or it's not the first time I see someone with natural hair in the workplace. Like, what are some of the things that I can do that are, in an essence, paying it forward to bring the next, you know, Black girl that's growing up into being a woman into these work environments? That's some of what comes up for me when you share that. We do carry a lot of emotional labor and, you know, challenges that come up for us within the workplace. But what we can't do is we can't let it stop us from being able to just show up and pull our advocates and our allies along with us and educate people along the way about why it is that we are who we are, you know? So that's a little bit my perspective, but I'm sure we can talk about 5 hours about that.
Well, you're touching on a subject that you and I have talked about before, which is sort of this closed loop system of belonging where an employer can do so much to be authentic, to be inviting, to be inclusive, to do equity audits, to have policies in place, right? Anti-bias hiring practices, all of that. And yet the employees at the table have to choose to belong to that system and kind of close the loop in order for that belonging to be actualized. And a personal story I have related to that is I've, you know, as an Asian woman growing up, finding my voice, finding my way, but also being raised to not stand out, but to assimilate and just like flow in under the radar. It was hard to feel like I belonged unless I was explicitly invited in. And in the past few years, especially, you know, as I've grown personally, professionally, it's like choosing belonging. I enter groups and spaces now and act as if I already belong. I just take that place at the table. I don't wait for someone to give it to me anymore. And that has been such a big change. So how do we activate that personal power that we're talking about, or presence and personal power, so that more employees can accept the belonging and close the system, so there's this healthy structure that's in place that can really, you know, help an organization thrive?
So number one, kudos to you on your journey, because that is just I love where you landed, and what you said resonates with me, because I think about how my father raised me. My father, you know, raised me to be universal in nature. And, you know, reason why he gave me the name that he gave me, and be able to make relationships with anyone in any space. And it's not just about, you know, you making friends that look like you and partners that look like you, but it is about you being willing to diversify your own network of circle. And at the time he called it a circle because I was growing up. And what that what he also did, what he didn't realize, what a lot of parents did, yours included, was focus on you not necessarily just standing out, but you being able to fly in under the radar, right? Know who you are, but you need to be able to be assimilate. So, I mean, like, quite frankly, it is assimilation. And so
it is assimilation.
And we code switched, right? Along the way as well. And, you know, your question about how do we help solve for this within a workplace? One of the challenges is that, just speaking frankly, DEI and B are perceived to be these threatening, fearful words that people, like, they see it, especially diversity. I was just having a conversation with someone today that asked the question around, you know, like, diversity, the word in itself even feels, you know, for some people, it just shuts them down. It's like, you're right. And here's why people are not looking at why it even matters. Not the business case for DE&IB, not what it's going to do for our employee population for growth, but people are not taking either the time, or our systems, our workplaces are not saying, you know what, when you build a team, and this is what I'm working at now, working on now within our the current firm that I'm in, when you're starting up a project and you're bringing your teams together, what is it that you need to uncover about your teammates in the various dimensions of diversity that exists, so that we can recognize difference and see difference is beautiful? So the way that you and I, Wendy, the way that we talk, the way that we communicate, our cognitive styles, you know, the way that we process internal versus external process, or introvert, extrovert, disc profiles. I'm a high D. You might be my polar opposite as an S, right? Calling those things out of, this is who you are. This is who you are. This is who you are. And let's make sure that we figure out, within the ways of working, how we maximize on those dimensions of diversity, those differences that we bring to the table. And when we have to manage through conflict, recognizing that conflict might arise for a couple of reasons. It could be because of bias. It could be because styles are clashing. It could be because you say something, Wendy, that's offensive to me, but if it goes unchecked, you don't know any better. So how might we build the rapport to be able to learn from each other? And so what my point is integrating within the ways of working, how might DE&IB, and this is like the grand experiment that I'm constantly working on, how might we integrate it within our flow of work so deeply? Because at the end of the day, in a workplace, the contract that we sign is that you and I are agreeing to work within this workplace together, right? So what we have in common is
bottom line.
The bottom line. We have to work together. And so in order to get an organization to start to shift mindsets and behaviors around DE&IB, it's not that it lives on its own, right? It's not its own initiative. Not its own business unit. It has to be a business unit first in order for you to identify the practices, right? But, like, how can we integrate it all within our ways of being within an organization? And I think when organizations, you know, when they and we start to embrace that, to break it down to its most simplistic terms, then now all of a sudden people will be able to see why diversity matters. What does it mean for representation? What does it mean for how I make decisions and reduce conflicts, address conflicts? And because if we can start there and we're integrating it, then what we're doing is causing this domino effect. Diversity is a fact of who we are, how we are. the inclusivity of the mindset, right? That's a mindset thing. The belonging is going to be the byproduct of all of that. Plus, don't forget equity and accessibility, right?
Yeah.
And so when I feel like my team, kind of going back to my example, when I feel like the team that I'm a part of knows who I am, they're invested in creating a structure and a dynamic that is inclusive of me, and they're aware of my special needs, be it mental health or physical, visual, auto, whatever it is, then I start to feel like I belong, right? But but the only way that you can really feel like you belong is if we're doing a little bit of dismantling of these systems and we're integrating things into the way that we work and the ways of being, to where it is so natural that like people don't even see that it's diversity. People don't even see that it's a, you know, that it's an action that required them to sit in a week long program about bias. And, you know, it's just the way that we are, but it really does take, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a willingness to say, yes, we need this. Yes, we need to be able to dismantle a system a little bit. Yes, we need to invest disproportionately in coming up with new practices and rhythms. It requires the mindset of an inclusive leader to be able to see, yes, this is how we do it, in order for us to get to this. Every single interaction that we have as leaders, you know, from performance reviews to one-on-one conversations, we should be demonstrating what inclusive leadership looks like in order to glean the belonging, you know, part of it for our people. But it does take effort and continuous learning.
That's right.
And experimentation.
That's right.
And experimentation.
Well, it all comes down to when you say that you love design thinking, right? Design thinking is human-centered designing, putting the end user in mind at first, right? And so belonging and diversity and inclusion is really looking at people as people, not as resources. People with backgrounds and histories and needs that might be different than yours. So like, how do you meet them with empathy? So at least there's some real learning that happens at the space where the two of you meet, right? Yeah. And then you do that over and over again, or you institutionalize ways of having that happen throughout your organization. Does it require a C-level leadership to get it? Like, does the light bulb have to go on there first for this to take root? Or are there other glimmers of light that can kind of spark change in an organization to really move towards an inclusive culture?
You know, it sounds great to say it starts with the CEO first, but sometimes you don't have a CEO that has gone through that level in depth of work and even privy to even understanding what it may look like, right? I think oftentimes we think, well, they're a CEO, they should know X. And that's just not true, because they're a CEO because of other great skills, technical and strategic and financial acumen, and, you know, all these other things, right? But we can't automatically assume because they're a CEO that they come with and that they have to lead these types of initiatives. Now, it does mean that the CEO has someone, people, a team that they invest in to gather the insight from across the business, to understand what the current state is, to understand what might be some of the challenges that are getting in the way of the employee experience. But all of that requires for a CEO to be open, to be willing to say, there might be something broken. We typically look at employee engagement and we see X, and, you know, the way that we interpret those results. Or as organizations, we typically look at, you know, our pulse surveys and those things, right? And we try to interpret what we see. But not all the time are people looking at that as an opportunity to see what is it that is maybe we're missing. Might we bring in a DE&IB consultant to come in to take a look at what do they see for themes, and then be willing to invest in something like an insight sprint to sense out specifically around a specific challenge statement to understand, okay, what are the limits of beliefs that exist? We have values, but how are those values interpreted? How might the way that people activate on our values maybe deflect away from, you know, within the current firm that I'm in right now, we assume positive intent is a value, right? And, you know, it's a motto. And with assuming positive intention is a great model to operate under, because we should be assuming positive intention of our peers and of each other. However, we can't assume positive intent as a way to deflect from an experience that an employee is having, right? So, and we learn that through doing an insight sprint on ourselves to understand limited beliefs, you know, where values might be over-rotated, or understanding what the real experiences are of employees. What are they really looking to talk about? What are they fearful of? Like, where's trepidation? And so it takes for a CEO to be willing to do that type of work, and not only do that work, but then invest in the continuation of whatever it is that you learn. We're going to invest in unpacking that, making changes, and we're going to continue to evolve. And a CEO that is willing to learn and unlearn. And I think that, Wendy, is probably one of the hardest things, because we know that DE&IB is not always top of mind, you know, when it comes to what some organizations are focused on. It just isn't sometimes. And we like to say that it is. In organizations, you see it, they post that it is. But at the end of the day, if there's not a continuous investment in learning and unlearning and treating it no different from any other skill set that we're looking to sharpen, then it will always fall flat somehow, or you end up with the EIB leaders that are exhausted because the leaders that they're serving or in service to may not get it. And so, but that may not get it is more so about mindset and a willingness to just continuously learn and unlearn, and being willing to get the hands a little dirty with the people that have a passion. Because you can find employees within almost every organization, I'd assume, to have some level of passion around a dimension of DE&IB. So, yes, to answer your question, does it need to start with them? No. Do they need to be a part of it? Do they influence it? And is it is the success reliant on how they disproportionately make their decisions? Absolutely. And DE&IB should show up in the room when the DE&IB leader is not in the room. If we're talking strategy,
right,
is the CEO asking the question of how might this impact, like, how does DE&IB kind of fall into this, right? So that's what I'm thinking.
What I'm hearing is that we need to move from thinking of DE&IB as an initiative or a program and think of it as fabric weaving. We're weaving across an organization and we're really building and fostering relationships among people. I mean, fundamentally.
That's what it is. Because then if you focus on
that's
it.
That's
really what it's all about, right? In order to build trusting environments, in order to build safe environments, is working with a client recently about safety and safety within their workplace, because they are a utility company. And when we talked about safety and safety leadership, we had the opportunity to interweave. Safety is not just about calling out when there's something physically dangerous or hitting the stop button mm-hmm. when there's a potential incident. But it is about also the psychological safety as well. And that has some big diversity and inclusion and belonging and equity implications behind it. And so when we talk about safety, then you know, DE&IV helps drive safety, right? And but you have to look at it through a different lens. It requires for you to say, it's okay that we didn't think about that before. And it's okay. And now we know. And so what are we going to do about it, right? Mm-hmm. But yes, if we find ways to interweave it, which is why I love interweaving it within leadership development experience, interweaving it within when an organization is focused on competencies, interweaving it in learning and development engagements, interweaving it within a systems adoption, interweave it in the way that we design anything, anything, right? A product, a service. How do we wear that lens? And the more that we can start to do that, the more it'll promote conversation. I love it when I see people, the light bulb goes, and they're like, you know what? I didn't even think about a diversity implication with that. Huh. And then all of a sudden, I hear a story about a decision that they made somewhere else in some other environment. And it was because they learned something and they were like, yes. And that's what it's about. It's about driving better, more holistic, more safe decisions for other people, you know, decisions in business. It all works together.
And the solutions can be very elegant and simple too. Not everything is hot and heavy or requires a lot of effort.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when people are willing to lean in and want the relationship, but don't know how or have the mechanics, stepping in with the opportunity to slow down, drop in, tap in, and do a little healing that happens actually.
The healing. The healing can happen through conversation. What I've learned over the past few years in really doubling down in this work is there's a power of storytelling. There is a power of having conversation. There's a power of getting people to come to the table that and creating an environment where it is all about being curious, being vulnerable. Don't require a little bit of bravery, but allowing for people to come to the table to, I have these tenets that I use. And one of them is being present in the conversation. So if we're having this real conversation, be present and be with us and reserve judgment of what your fellow peer might say, because without having a space to be able to unpack concepts, the things that we're learning, experimenting with and trying on new language, without having that space and without others being able to hear each other's story. And it's not about always putting someone on platform and saying, hey, tell your story, right? But it is about giving people opportunity to be able to share what's coming up for them, how this shows up for them in their life. In personal, in work. Personal and work really aren't that separate, right? And it's artful conversation that will move us and it will allow for us to be able to find common ground. It will allow for us to have conversations. I literally have a roundtable conversation I host for people within the firm that I'm in where it's focused on how to start to lean into idea conversations when you may feel fearful or trepid or hesitant, specifically mm-hmm. because there are people that feel that way. But how might we create a space for them to start to unpack? And before they can come to the table to unpack, you have them do a little bit of work to go inside themselves first. Like, it starts with emotional intelligence and self-awareness and being prompted to ask yourself some serious questions and recognize where bias may show up. Give opportunity to learn a little bit about a little bit of something, to feel like you can grant yourself some permission to show up and take a step of bravery mm-hmm. to have a conversation. We need to talk to each other more. We need to connect with each other more, especially in workplaces where people are scattered everywhere. It's people need the opportunity to be able to connect and build off of the power of storytelling.
Amen.
Amen.
And it's fine to address your fear. Amen. That's a good place to end, actually. But it's okay to address your fear and say, this is hard for me to ask, and I'm not sure how it's going to land for you if I ask. I love this conversation that we just had and hearing about the practices that you use with at Tier One with clients. There's actually a system that Intune has been identifying around five aspects or five ingredients of success. It doesn't matter where you come into the system, but can everyone be an ally in the organization, share common language, and that common ethos, belief that diversity matters, that diversity is an attribute. Can the leadership champion DEIB initiatives and model it at whatever level, big or small, that they can do, but it's important that they act as champions and see themselves as champions. That managers, anyone who is a people manager is automatically an active practitioner of inclusion and belonging practices. So how do they wear that hat all the time and know that they're an active practitioner? People are learning from them. They are openly learning so they can increase their toolbox and their skill set to be a better practitioner. How do we make learning visible? So all the things that we talked about in the session, how do we gather that together and have the conversations? How do we learn from each other's stories and make it more visible, the differences beyond race and skin color and, culture? There are all these ways of neurodiversity and the playbook of how I like to work and communicate as an employee. Like, these things matter as well, and they all foster inclusion and belonging. And then the last piece is that we have pilot programs that, if it feels too big to get started, that we go back to experimentation. And if you have employee resource groups in place, or you may have other pockets of gatherings of smaller groups, how do you resource and support those employee groups as experimental pods, as pilot programs, and then take the learning from them and then scaffold that throughout the organization and make it more visible for everyone so that we're all in this together. So thank you for the conversation. And as always, before we end, we'd like to leave listeners, if you're listening today, with a micro practice, something concrete that you can, and actionable that you can take away from a moment of inspiration from listening to this podcast. Mm-hmm. And Victoria and I were just talking about that earlier. Mm-hmm. We have an idea that we'd like to give today, which is a prompt. So if you have a journal, a leadership journal, or a playbook that you go to, or maybe you want to just type it on your computer and open up a doc, what are ways that you feel inspired to experiment with your growing comfort in talking about diversity, embracing diversity, mm-hmm. in noticing how you can provide more inclusion through your own behavior, your words, your thoughts, your behaviors, and ways that you can foster belonging by feeling it in yourself first, and then replicating it, inviting that feeling, that felt sense for others? Victoria, I'd love to have you offer a prompt as well. I think that earlier we were speaking, and I know that you have a great idea to contribute here. So a micro practice for our listeners today, please.
Ooh, those are some great prompts. The one prompt that I would add is around this notion of how do we integrate this within our ways of working? And so the question that I would ask is, as a leader or not as a leader, just as a human within a workplace, what's the one area that you think you can actually drive a different decision, a different way of being, a different way of working through the lens of making sure that it feels more inclusive and making sure that people feel seen? Like, diversity is about seeing and recognizing each other in our uniqueness and our difference. So what's the practice? What's the one thing that you see as an opportunity within the ways of working for you to be able to diligently and deliberately recognize diversity and be more inclusive?
Thank you so much for being here today. I look forward to many and future conversations with you. I love the framing in your micro prompt of not just a leader, but a human. And that allowed me to just take a deep breath in my own body and to drop down and feel in a different way than if I'm walking around wearing a hat as a leader. So you are a leader, you show up that way, but also recognize yourself as a human being. And thank you for listening to this episode of The Business of Being Human. I'm Wendy Horn Brower. We invite you to find us at intunecollective.com. We have a page with resources on diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, practices, and workshops. And if you'd like to reach out at ignite@intunecollective.com. Victoria, how can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn at Victoria L. Rogers with a D on LinkedIn. And feel free to connect with me there. I look forward to it.
Reach out. Thank you. And thank you for listening as a human being today.
As a human being.
Take care.
See y'all.
If listening to The Business of Being Human has intrigued you, inspired you, encouraged you, we would appreciate it if you rated and left us a review on Apple Podcasts. This will help others find the show.
The Business of Being Human is a production of Intune Collective. It is produced and edited by Elizabeth Joy Windham.
Executive producers are Christine Hildebrand and Wendy Horn Brower. Our theme music is by Adrian Walther. It is called Empowered. Cover and episode art is by Lisa Hardy.
You can find all of our episodes and learn more about the services of Intune Collective at intunecollective.com.